From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host and MC, Randall White. Today, we're taking a look at the local comedy scene by getting to know funny people on and off stage. Yassine Mazen is a Sacramento State student with big dreams of making a name for himself. He grew up in Iraq and had to relocate with his family to Jordan in 2006, and then Sacramento in 2008. His comedy focuses on making the refugee experience relatable for American audiences. I spoke with him earlier this month and started by asking him about quitting his job to focus on getting more stage time.
The more time you put into something, obviously, the better you're going to get at it. And that's what really stand-up is really. That's how you get a grasp of it. The more you're on stage, the more comfortable you are, the more rooms you experience. The more experience you have in dealing with those certain rooms, you kind of start seeing patterns in different venues and different clubs. So you just, the more you do it, the more comfortable you are, and that's just how it is.
Now, you were able to quit your job, but quitting schooling would be a whole different thing, right? Because your parents do not want the comedy to get in the way of your education.
Right. I think it's all about balancing things. One, I know comedy is not going to support me financially. Like, I'm so aware of that. So having just that degree to get that and then hopefully getting some form of job, that would be really nice. But ultimately, my goal is to do comedy full time.
And so possibly, like right now, you don't think it'll support you, but you do foresee a future where it's your main source of income?
Oh, I have to. I have to see that, yeah. There is a goal in my mind, and finances are not really the main drive force, but wherever I want to go with comedy, I think, money is going to be involved.
No, but for real, have you guys, like, seen any other Iraqis, or am I the first one you've seen live, or anyone seen Iraqis? Have you met anyone? No? Okay, you guys, either cowards or liars. Okay, thank you. Brave. Thank you so much. But that's the thing, like, there is more of us. Like, I used to, when I first came here, there was not a lot, and, I used to meet them and be like, oh, yeah, like, what's up, buddy? And now they're all over the place, and I hate it. But, like, you guys know that that song that goes, war, ooh, yeah, what is it good for? Immigrants. That's what that does.
Because my goal is to be someone, right? So if I'm going in it for the money, I sound like half the population of the world.
If not more.
If not more, exactly. So I think it was really important at some point, like, in my head, like, I fantasize about the money and stuff, and I get excited, but really, like, where is that? I could do that with anything. But so I had to set aside a different goal, and I have to really feel myself, do I approve of that goal? And that was when once I got there, then comedy became a different game for me.
At what point did you realize that you're funny?
Oof. I think I realized as far as comedy or just in general and as a person?
I guess in general. And when did you think you could apply that to a career?
Okay, so in middle school, because I moved out of Iraq and then moved into Jordan, and then it just seemed like my way of making friends was to be funny. And then just watching people laugh and making people laugh, they listen to me when I'm making them laugh. So that's when I felt like, oh, I am this person. I'm a funny person now because that's how I cope with things. And then being a stand-up comic, I became obsessed with it once I moved into the U.S. around eighth grade. And I would talk about wanting to do stand-up in high school, and some kids would be like, oh, yeah, we're going to meet up. You should just come around and just do something for us. I'd be like, no. Like, I would get so nervous. But we eventually, we had to meet that goal.
Like, that's cool, because, like, I went to school in Iraq, and I went to school here, so now I know what it's like to have a first world and a third world bully. I think it's fantastic. First world bullies, you guys know them. They, like, come around, push you, make fun of your name. Like, over here, they're like, hey, what's your name? And I said, Yassine Mazen. And they're like, oh, what's that? Yassine my b-. I wasn't even mad. I was like, thank you, Joseph. I'm going to start my career with that one. Thank you. Throwaway bullies are a little bit different. They're terrorists. They, like, blew up my school. So this is an upgrade. Like, I'm very happy to be here. But that's the thing, bro. Like, the kids call me a terrorist because, you know, kids, they're f***ing. But that's just, But that's the thing. I got called here. And, like, I wish I could go back to school and, like, take revenge on those kids. Like, because they used to be like, oh, here's Yasin. He's going to go, Allahu Akbar. I wish I could go back and be like, here's Timothy, AR-15 kickflip.
Where are those nerves now when you get up there and there's just silence on the other end after you've told what you think is a really funny joke?
Oh, those nerves are... So when I get a silence, like a joke that bombed, I realize that, like I said, it's a pattern thing. So I always understand that there was some form of way that I lost people. So it could have been like at a bar show where the people are drunk and I'm talking too fast, and then they just simply didn't hear some of the vital words that they needed to hear. Or I could have just simply threw off someone just because I tried some crowd work or something that just drove away from my message.
And I don't know if you could tell from the way I'm standing, but I really want to be a comedian. And my parents hate that I'm doing this because they're like, dude, we got you out of Iraq and you're still bombing.
You either tell a joke or you perform a joke. When you tell a joke, you just sound like a script. And a lot of people will catch on to that, and it will lose a lot of its value. But if you're performing the joke, and it's in that moment, that very moment that the person is seeing you and you're doing it for them, then that's going to hit differently. So you just get used to realizing that, oh, I messed up.
I don't know, man. I don't know if you could tell from the way I'm standing, but I really want to be a comedian. I usually get like an aw, but okay. That's cool. But like I told my parents that, and they hate it. They're like, you suck. No, they're like, really? Like, this is, we got you out of Iraq and you're still bombing? Like, just go to school. Do you not get the hint? Like, that's all we want.
I used to blame the audience at times because I would think, oh, no, they didn't. But then I realized, no, there are people that are doing way better than I am right now on stage. So they did something right. I'm the one that's doing something wrong.
So yeah. If you bombed, it's not necessarily the joke that needs changing. It's the performance.
Oh, yeah. It's a little bit of both. You could always take out pieces and put in different pieces of the joke. But the performance, I think, is always because a performance can make a bad joke funny.
Yeah. Have your parents seen your shows?
So funny thing is they actually saw me, I want to say like 2 months in when I was telling like the worst type of comedy that I didn't want them to be there. They just showed up unannounced.
Oh, you didn't know they were coming.
I didn't know that it was at the Comedy Spot, and my cousins were in town, so they knew I was doing this. So I was like, okay, you guys are from Canada. You should come check out, no diss on Canada, but like you should come check out like this thing because I think you guys would like it, and they were very invested in it. And then out of nowhere, they're my cousins and then their parents and then my parents and sister and brother, they all just showed up randomly, and I had to go out there and tell the worst. And I just realized, you know what?
When you say the worst, you mean like dirty jokes? Like
dirty jokes, yeah. But like things that I don't tell anymore, you know what I mean? Like I have one premise that's still relevant. And that's just because it was about my background. But that's pretty much it. The rest was garbage.
Do you have a deal with your parents now? Like, you can't come until I hit a certain point? Or?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I had that deal originally, which they just betrayed. And But after that, I could see the disappointment in their faces. And I'm just like, remember, I told you this. This is step one. We're going to build our way up. And then they're like, okay, whatever, we don't improve. But then I kind of just did it silently. I didn't really tell them that I was out doing this. And I did that for about a year until, obviously, I built up more credit. I built up better material. And then all of a sudden, they see me, like, posting, like, I'm doing this show, doing that show. And then people in our Iraqi community are asking, oh, your son's, like, doing this. And they're like, oh, he is? He's still doing that? But then now that I'm getting cred for it, and then people are interested, so they kind of, like, are seeing, oh, maybe he is getting better. And then eventually, like, they started talking to me about it again, where I was telling them, oh, yeah, all that stuff is gone now. I have way better stuff. But regardless, I don't want them there yet. I want them to come to the special. You know what I mean? When it's all done and finalized, like the final draft, then they can come.
The one that's being filmed for HBO.
Exactly, yeah.
We're speaking with Yassim Mazen about being a stand-up comic and his influences, including his early life in Iraq. You play a lot on the fact that you are an Iraqi-American in right. in your comedy. Who are your influences? Are there Iraqi comedians that aren't household names here in the U.S.? Are there American comedians that you really draw off of?
So the comedy, the comedians, at least, I draw a lot from the Americans. Stand-up is not really known in Iraq. It's mostly like sketch shows and stuff like that. But as far as people, my brother was a really funny kid. I mean, he's still funny, but he's 6 years older than I am. And I remember in Iraq, it's actually my earliest memory of wanting to be funny is I was sitting in a room with all of our family, and he's in sixth grade, and he has the room. He's talking, and everybody else is quiet, and they're listening, and it's because he was making them laugh. And I remember sitting there. That was my earliest memory, like, oh, my gosh, nobody ever listens to me like that.
He's got the floor, and he's got it because of his humor.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was my earliest thought, like, that's a way to grasp people. Yeah. And that was my—so my brother was—and then I remember, like, when we came here in America, Facebook was just a thing, and he would post funny statuses, and people react to him. And I'm like, oh, I want to be like that. I want to be like that. And then I did it.
You said there's no real stand-up in Iraq, but there is humor. I
there mean, is all, definitely
all
humor.
All cultures have humor. And a lot of times you'll hear people say, you know, oh, that's British humor. You know, what is Iraqi humor? What makes it a little bit different than what we would be used to here?
Iraqi humor is just going way out, like way obscure. Like, if you take a scenario as, like, kids say, from 0 to 100.
Like a Portlandia kind of thing where you, like, move it so far into ridiculous you can't help but laugh?
That's actually a good way to put it. Yeah, it is kind of like that. But then again, it is actually mostly sketch-driven, too. And, yeah, that's a good comparison, actually. I never thought of it that way.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
Yeah. So the American comedians that you look up to or that you model your comedy after, are they some names we would know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So it started off with Dave Chappelle, Louis C.K., and then George Carlin eventually became like a preacher type comedian that I'm like, that's the bigger picture in my head because he was saying messages out there, and people were thinking about it, and that's really what I want out of this whole thing. So Carlin's definitely up there, and then there's a bunch of comics that just afterwards just flowed in just because they're so funny, like Hannibal Buress, Rory Scovel, all those comics.
Do you watch a lot of it, or are you afraid that you'll start to be more of a mimic than yourself?
That's a very good point. Yeah, you have to at some point limit yourself. Because you understand that they're funny. I know the comics and I know that they're funny, but if I watch more of their stuff, then you start picking up patterns. Actually, me and a couple comics were talking about it the other night. The whole like knee slap, the mic on the knee, like just so you could laugh at your joke. That's a cheat because then people would interact with you. But that's just a pattern you saw somebody else do and now you're doing it. And you want to be yourself. If you want to be on top of this game, you want to be an individual.
The United States has a long and complicated history with Iraq. Are you afraid at any point that you're going to offend people in the audience? Or is there a subset group of people you think you might offend?
I've worked different rooms so far, and I understand the possibility of offending someone. That being said, I don't think I would ever let it stop me from being myself. I mean, as long as I'm being myself, I think I'm staying true to what I really want to do. So I'm going to stick with that. However, that being said, I felt that on both sides. I've performed in rooms where the crowd was mostly offensive as far as, like, racist side. And I could tell, like, it wasn't laughing with me versus laughing at me. So as long – and I still did my thing. I did my job. So I think it just goes both ways at this point. They do them, and I do myself. And if I offend anybody, I'm sorry that you thought that, but my intentions, I know where I'm coming from, and I know my intentions are clear.
Do you think you're able to cross boundaries because of your appearance? You joke, I've seen some of your sketch, and you joke about the fact that you don't look Iraqi compared to what
Americans think an Iraqi should look like.
Right. I think that's my safety zone. If all else fails, like, I could just go in the Midwest and pretend I'm white. Like, I think that... No, I do dabble with that. I think that's super funny because when I really realized... Because I used to just go up on stage and talk about being in Iraq, and then too many people would come up to me and be like, are you actually Iraqi?
I feel like if they put white kids on the news, that would have provoked the empathy to pull out of the war. Like, if you guys saw white kids, you'd have been like, oh my God, there's people over there. So, yeah. Even now I'm here. I look weird. I get it. Like, I look weird. I look like a grandpa and a grandson at the same time. What the is going on, man?
And it got to the point where I just don't know how to answer that. Like, no, I'm a racist. It's funny you ask. Yeah, I just pretend. So I just...
Is it offensive when people say you don't look Iraqi?
No, because I'm used to it. Like I said, I use humor to cope with a lot of things. So it's whatever at this point. But it just got so repetitive that I started thinking it was really funny. And then I realized, people are wondering that. I should probably address it at some point in my performance. And even though I address it, it still happens. Yeah.
Do you think of yourself more of one thing or another? Like, I'm a Californian, I'm an Iraqi, I'm an American.
Oh, this definitely started off as an identity crisis. This definitely started like that. Because I was in college, like, 2 years in, and just, like, not being able to connect with anyone. And it was like, ooh, who am I? Like, at some point in school, middle school, people called me Jason, and then I didn't like that. And then I just kind of, like, my name is Yasin. That's how it's always been said, but I know it's a lot easier to go on the tone of Yasin. So it's like, it's just like, what am I? I want to hold on to something. And I'm a Californian. I don't talk to my family that much in Iraq. So I'm like losing Arabic as far as reading and writing. And so who do I really connect with? Am I more Californian and am I more Iraqi? And it's actually funny. I think it was when I first started, I lived 11 years in Iraq and 11 years in California. So it was right at that brink where it's like, whoa, like, which one is it? So at this point, I realized, like, no, I am really both. I have that identity and I have this amazing opportunity to grow up in California, which is something really special. And I also grew up in Iraq, and I feel like that's a privilege on its own just because of the perspective that I gained out of it. So I just really want to bring the two of those things and just make the best out of it.
If history had been different and your family could have stayed put safely in Iraq, do you have any wishes that that could have been how your life played out?
At the time where this never happened, of course I would think that. Because this was a really scary thing to leave everything and go to a new life. And to a whole different world. Like, it's a first world and a third world for a reason, because you really walk into a different environment. So at that time, if that really happened, then of course I wouldn't think twice about it. I'm like, oh yeah, thank God. But what scenario would that have been when Iraq had it had itself together, you know?
And our challenges often make us who we are, for better or for worse.
Right. I think you always get down, but you always have to come up. That's how you get better. That's how you grow.
Being an Iraqi and not knowing the language, I end up saying, like, so much stupid stuff. Like, I remember I met my sixth grade teacher. She asked me for my full name. And Iraqis have really long full names. So I immediately told her my name is Yasin Mazen Shamsuddin Abdelamir Kadlam Hassan Kadlam Haider Ahmed Al-Haideri. She was like, you get the out of here. Like, oh. I'm not having this in my classroom. Okay, she may as well have said, this is what she said. She's like, oh, you're one of those. She tried to be nice, so she asked. She's like, oh, how many names is that? And I f***ed up and I said, around 9/11. Okay, that was my first lesson. You're not supposed to say those numbers consecutively.
In addition to making people laugh, do you hope to teach some history to the people in the audience?
Yeah, definitely. That is the ultimate goal. Like I said, the Carlin message, that is the ultimate goal, to just stand out there and let people know what is really going on. I really want that. I want to get smarter. I'm still 23. There's so much more to learn, but I know I could, if I drive myself and I really push for it, I know I could get there.
That's Yassine Mazen. Our multimedia producer, Andrew Nixon, made a video profile about Yassine and his family. You can find that video and some of Yassine's upcoming shows on our website, capradio.org/insight. Let's keep the applause going. And up next is Keith Lowell Jensen. He gets unclean on stage.